Devoncast.
From Radio X.
This is Devoncast, your weekly helping of news and views from Devon, for Devon. I'm Guy Henderson, and I'm joined for this episode by Paul Nero and by Brad Hardware. Brad, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Paul, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Guy.
Nice to have you along. We'll be talking this week about pedestrianisation and car bans. We'll be chatting about a new festival with top gardener Toby Buckland. Some school children will be telling us about talking to astronauts in space, and we talk about those talky palm trees. This is Devoncast. But first, Torbay Road. We called it a little while ago, didn't we? The story that just keeps on giving, and it really does. Torbay Road in Paignton is the main drag down to the seafront. Shops, bars, it's been dubbed the Golden Mile by lazy journalists. That was me about a decade ago. We were trying to think of a way of describing that street that runs down from the railway station to the seafront, and we decided it was our version of the Golden Mile, and it's kind of caught on.
Why has this been so controversial, though? I know people don't like to drive around, but pedestrians tend to like pedestrianisation.
Well, it was a strange one, because Torbay Council carried out a consultation back in 2022, and the people who took part in it decided that they wanted the cars out.
Yeah, of course they did. The activists, yeah.
Pedestrians in. So they did that.
Isn't that what happens with consultations? It's only the people who really, really got a strong opinion on one side who take part in the consultations.
You might say that. Yeah, that's true. But the people with the really strong opinions against didn't have their voices heard in the consultation. Now, whether they didn't take part or whether there weren't enough of them is a bit of a moot point. But the businesses suddenly realised that with the passing traffic gone, Torbay Road would change. They found things very, very tough for quite a long time. Some of them even said, well, as you'll hear in a minute, some of them even said they were considering whether they could go on.
That's what happens in consultations sometimes, isn't it? That people then have their opinions heard, and lo and behold, when the work gets done, that's when the trouble really starts.
I think you're probably right. The traders who really felt the squeeze when the cars were gone, the decision by the council to open it up again could be a lifeline. Our first guest is Martin Bullis, who's been running the Come West fashion store in Torbay Road for 40 years. He led some of the protests when the street was closed. What does he think of it now that it's open again?
I think it's great. It's great news, yes. Yeah, very good. Thank the Tories for keeping their word. It's been a long time. It did take longer than we thought. And I think people will be able to get around Paignton much better, and they'll pop into the shops more. It's been putting people off. It's been very, very difficult for the taxi drivers to work around it. We found that in the mornings we were very slow, because people just couldn't get into the town, and in the afternoons they were going home early, so it shortened our shopping window by probably at least 4 hours a day. It was very bad.
So how then did it really affect Come West, which has been part of the fabric of Paignton for a very long time? Do you remember those cinema adverts that used to say, this business is just 100 yards from this cinema?
Brad won't remember that.
That's before my time.
These were slides, weren't they? And they were often for curry houses.
Yeah, well, there was one for Come West. Well, that always used to come up in the Paignton cinema.
So. You know, I used to work for TSW, where we even ran those things on television as well. You could buy a 10-second advert, a slide.
What's TSW?
TSW Television Southwest. You could buy a slide, a 10-second static slide, where there was a voiceover on it, which said virtually, you know, come to the curry house in Paignton. Can you imagine that on television today, just interrupting an advert break for a logo of a business? It just wouldn't happen.
People would love it, though, wouldn't they? A bit of retro advertising. There's a business to be had there. Anyway, let's hear from Martin about how he was affected.
We're a very long-established business. We've been here since 1975, before me, but I've been here since 1984. And so we're very established, and we've got a lot of loyal customers who will sort us out, you know, find us. The extra people that used to just pop in on the way home from work just disappeared.
And how does the future look for Torbay Road as part of a wider Paignton improvement? There's a lot of improvements coming for Paignton. Torbay Council has plenty of government money to spend. It'll be spent in the town if the project's going to be got underway.
The road definitely needs investment. It needs smartening up. It could be, for a small amount of money, it could be made to look really, really nice.
That was Martin Bullis, who's led some of the protests against the closure of Torbay Road. Other traders are also feeling the difference now that the cars are back. The next person I spoke to down there was Sheena Robinson at the Cupcake Cafe. How does she feel now that the street's open again?
That is what we hoped for. It needed doing this time last year. I honestly think it'll have affected some of the holiday makers for at least this year, because we had a lot say no, we can't get down here, we won't be back. And it's going to take a long time for it to filter through to people up country that it's open again.
I asked Sheena how bad things had been during the spring and summer of 2023.
By about March last year, we cut our staff, we cut our days that we were opening. We were really, really getting to the stage where we're like, oh, can we hold on a bit longer? And it was by our fingertips that we were juggling money around.
And while she says she thinks that a limited traffic ban might work if it was just for the summer, she's hoping 2024 might be a little bit better.
Fingers crossed. I think it might be a good idea in the 6-week summer holiday, but for the whole year round.
That was Sheena Robinson of the Cupcake Cafe in Torbay Road, Paignton, where the cars have been allowed back in after a pedestrianisation trial that sparked protests.
And doesn't this show, Guy, that councils often listen to the person who shouted last and shouted longest? How much did it cost to implement a scheme to pedestrianise that area because a consultation came out in favour of pedestrianisation? It's put in. All the motorists and all the traders then say, well, this isn't very good, and they start shouting, and then however many hundreds of thousands of pounds are spent taking it back out again. It just suggests the consultation hasn't been assessed properly.
But it's not only in Torbay, is it? It's similar to what was happening in Exeter with the low-traffic neighbourhoods.
You're right. And Newton Abbott as well. There's a scheme about to start in Newton Abbott where there'll be massive changes to traffic in the town centre. They're really contentious. But you're right about the Exeter one.
Mm.
I mean, that's obviously it's Exeter City Council elections coming up next week, and that's going to be quite an interesting part of the campaigns. It's going to influence a lot of votes, I think. But the election last year was an important background point to the Torbay Road pedestrianisation. The consultation was carried out under the previous Lib Dem Independent Coalition, and the Conservative candidates for last year's council elections went down Torbay Road, listened to the businessmen and said, look, if we get in, we'll let the cars back in. And it became a very important campaign point in what turned out to be a really, really close election battle. And in some ways, you can say that the Torbay Road campaign possibly influenced the outcome of the election. So once they'd been voted in, as Martin Bullis says, they had to keep their word and do it.
Were there any fans of the pedestrianisation scheme after it was implemented? Did they then feel that their views were ignored?
I don't think so. I mean, there were people who were in favour of the car ban. There were people on social media who said, it's great now, we can walk down the middle of the road, we can push the pushchair down the middle of the road. There were cafe tables out and what have you. It still isn't quite back to how it was. There is a bit more room there.
You as a reporter on the ground don't feel this time that now it's been taken out again that people are going to go down there with placards and protest that their views, which were part of a formal consultation, have now been ignored?
I don't think so. I think the protest, as you say, the long and loud protests came from the businesses, and I think we've probably drawn a line under this one now. But Exeter and Newton Abbott, we still have quite a long way to go.
The war still rages on.
Absolutely. You're listening to Devoncast, which comes from Radio X and the Local Democracy Reporting Service. It's available on the Radio X website, from your usual podcast provider, and from the all-new Devoncast Radio on DAB Digital Radio. Still to come, palm trees and astronauts. But first, Paul, you've been gardening.
Well, I haven't been gardening, but as the first May bank holiday is just about upon us and many people are thinking of gardening and how to get their gardens looking tip-top this summer, I have been talking to somebody who does know. And even if you don't have a garden but you have some green fingers, or you think you would like to have green fingers, there's a festival near Exeter coming up this weekend. Depends when you're listening to us. We're recording this a week ahead of the first May bank holiday, and Toby's Garden Festival is taking place just before that, Friday and Saturday, just ahead of the May bank holiday. It's the brainchild of Devon broadcaster and author Toby Buckland. And it really is a festival, guys. So there are several gardening acts on at the same time. You choose which tent to go to listen to a gardener. So you have to choose what you want to see and what you want to hear. And there's food and there's drinks and there's crafts as well. Now, Toby's a guest on Devon People, which is on Devoncast Radio, as we are as well. And he told me that many things we don't think of gardens actually are, like sports fields.
No, you go up to Exeter City, go to the Chiefs games, and the grass that the players play on, that's a garden. That's man-made. That is garden. It's really the most watched garden or looked at garden probably in the whole of the South West.
I don't want to spoil it, but isn't there some plastic in it?
Yeah, they're called hybrid pitches. Yeah, yeah. So they inject because basically the grass, the main thing is to keep it warm and keep it free draining. Yep. And so they... You go up to Exeter City, go to the Chiefs games, and the grass that the players play on, that's a garden. That's man-made. That is garden. It's really the most watched garden or looked at garden probably in the whole of the South West.
I don't want to spoil it, but isn't there some plastic in it?
Yeah, they're called hybrid pitches. Yeah, yeah. So they inject because basically the grass, the main thing is to keep it warm and keep it free draining. Yep. And so then you need a sandy soil. But to hold that sandy soil together, you might have up to 40% of plastic in it, like injected. But that's it's still horticulture. It's still gardening.
The people at Extinction Rebellion are getting a bit cross about a pitch down at Exwick playing fields being taken away and put in with an artificial substance. That's really not cheating, is it?
Well, no.
I don't want to get too controversial, but these teenagers who are learning their craft in sports from Exeter College need to be able to play day in, day out, and not break their legs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's been tremendously wet, hasn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say... I mean, obviously, artificial... I play football every Monday night, and I play on an artificial pitch. And the fact is... there's advantages to people living in urban places for the environment because you're just keeping everything together. Now, you know from just walking up and down to the washing line in the garden across grass, it's not going to take that. And certainly not football four times a day, is it? So, you know, fair enough. And
but it's not going to kill the planet. You clearly care about the environment, the climate change and all that kind of stuff. There's a place for everything, is there, provided we don't do too much?
Everything in balance. Obviously, the thing to recognise, professional sport, the top of the game, always on grass. And that's
Is it? Is that what Manchester City are doing? They're playing on grass, are they?
Yeah.
So it's the drainage and the heating. Because I remember in the 80s, Toby, the Football Association used to have to give points to clubs and decide the results because there was snow on the pitch. Yeah, we don't get that these days.
No, they've got underground heating. That all started at Arsenal at Highbury, and they put pipes underneath to keep it warm. And obviously, I mean, you know, they replace the pitch maybe twice a year. So, I mean, Man United have had a terrible pitch for a long time because of the stands shading it in the winter. And so now they use artificial lights. They try and get airflow across it. You know, it's a whole science. And this is what I mean. It's all gardening. That's the point. It's all got. You might not have a garden, but you might be interested in this because, you know, we've all got skin in this game. We have.
Do you find people become more interested in the subject as we get older?
I think it's an appreciation of life as you get older. You know, you just you look at wildlife, you see the birds going about there, but you notice stuff that you perhaps just walk by when you were younger and just think it's just a miracle, isn't it? And it's living alongside you, you know. And you, this time of year, when you hear the bird song in the morning, I mean, you know, I don't know about you, Paul, I wake up earlier and earlier
and sleep
less and less. And, you know, but the bird song at this time of year, it's a miracle.
Well, I like the bird song at 5 o'clock in the morning, but when it gets to seven, I've got seagulls.
It's not quite as nice. Well, it's all to do with the size of the bird's eye and the retina. So the first bird to sing in the morning always is a robin because it's got the largest eye, so it can sense the sunlight before the other birds. By the time you get into the seagulls, the sun's well up.
And that was Toby Buckland speaking to Paul Nero, and the festival is on Friday and Saturday the 3rd and 4th of May at Powderham Castle. You might just get a half price voucher if you're quick through the Radio X website, but we can't promise because we're recording this a week ahead of the event. And if the event has actually passed by, well, you should have tuned in earlier. The Devon People podcast is running on Devoncast Radio in full right now, and it's on the Devoncast Radio website too. Just visit devoncastradio.co.uk. Now, astronauts still to come, but first, another long-running Torbay saga that has finally been resolved after a fashion.
We've been talking this week, haven't we, about stories that keep on giving. And another one was the palm trees on Torquay seafront. You remember back in December when 40 palm trees were cut down pretty much in one fell swoop in the Italian gardens?
We've done a lot of this in Devon, haven't we? We did Plymouth last year, the beginning of the year. Talbot, who's next?
Toby Buckland would not be happy at the quantity of trees being cut down.
I thought you were going to say Toby Buckland would be next.
The Torquay job was all part of a major revamp of the gardens, which was done to celebrate their 100th birthday this year. The revamp's now complete. It looks absolutely fantastic. And if you take a look at the story on the Radio X website, there's a fabulous drone picture which shows you just how fantastic it is. But when the trees were cut down by Swissco, which is Torbay Council's own parks and gardens company, they did it without telling anybody. In fairness, their charter says they didn't have to tell anybody, but in hindsight, they really should have. There was a furore, there were national headlines, and there was a big internal inquiry at the council. The idea was to follow an email trail and find out who knew what was going on, when it was going on, and why the people who didn't know what was going on and hadn't been told when they probably should have. It all got a bit acrimonious, and most of it came out in the wash at a Torbay Council meeting the other night. The upshot was that flaws in communication and management have been identified, some people have held their hands up and said they got things wrong, and measures have been put in place to make sure it doesn't happen again. But it was also avoidable. Anyway, I spoke to Councillor Adam Billings afterwards. He's the Cabinet Member with Parks and Gardens among his responsibilities, and I asked him what went wrong.
There was a failure in terms of corporate control, in terms of actually having proper checks and balances in place, ensuring that Swissco did what the council and elected members wanted. We heard from the meeting this unusual phrase of thin client. What that basically meant was Swissco didn't have any proper oversight about it. Now, that's something that was clearly never going to work. It was a hostage to fortune, and that's something that we've stopped. Going forwards, we have far more better governance policies in place. We have robust checks and balances. And in the background as well, the Italian gardens, the source of all of this focus in terms of this. Well, if one was to go down to the site now, I would say they look amazing. I'm extremely proud of what our people from Swissco have delivered. And I would encourage all residents and visitors to go and enjoy the gardens.
You ever heard of a thin client approach?
Not a clue what you're talking about.
I hadn't come across that at all, but that basically, Adam Billings summed that up in a council meeting last night, funnily enough, as being, if you have a builder in to do some work on your house, you just give him a pot of money and the builder then decides what you want done, when he's going to do it, how he's going to do it.
And then comes back and asks for more.
And comes back when the job is all done. So it's an approach that a lot of councils use.
And that's a thin client
thin
approach.
It's a little bit beyond me, but you'll hear it again. It's one of those phrases that'll keep on coming up.
We should do a glossary of local democracy terms somewhere, shouldn't we?
Thin client. You're listening to Devoncast, which comes from Radio X and the Local Democracy Reporting Service. You get it on the Radio X website, from your usual podcast provider, and from the all-new Devoncast Radio on DAB Digital Radio.
Now, children at a school in Devon were the only youngsters in the UK selected to talk to astronauts on the International Space Station as it whizzed over Devon the other night. Devoncast's Laurie Moore has been talking to the head teacher and some of the youngsters who got to ask the questions.
Children from an East Devon school have made contact with space and spoken with an astronaut upon the International Space Station this week. Axminster Primary School was the only one to get connected with the satellite as it orbited 250 miles above the Earth. Head teacher Claire Holbert explains how it came about.
About a year ago, we filled in an application to apply for this opportunity. Only one school in the UK gets picked each year, and we were really lucky to be selected on the basis of our application.
They then prepared to link with the space station with the help of ARIS, the amateur radio for the International Space Station, talk to American naval test pilot Matthew Dominic, who's commanding the SpaceX Crew 8 mission.
So we've built a huge antenna out the front of school, which is higher than our two-storey building. And then we've got some radio guys at the front of the hall. And at about 11:40, we heard a crackling noise and then the call sign was given out. And when Matthew Dominic was over America, he was able to make contact with us and reply. And he's travelled at 5 miles per second as he was answering 20 questions from our children.
Some of the children asked how the astronaut votes and what kind of training he was put through, as well as what the hardest part of going into space is.
I asked, how do you vote in space? And then I learnt that they get another person to vote for them.
Yeah, I learnt that astronauts have to do 2.5 hours of training daily.
Well, I asked him what was the hardest part about getting ready to go to space, and he said that the hardest part was definitely the training, because once he got up there, it was easier because he knew what he had to do.
The pupils were all excited to be talking to someone so far from Earth, and they'd been looking forward to it for many weeks.
It felt really, like, unreal, because I didn't ever think that Sam could go up into space.
Well, he answered loads of questions, loads of other people, and he was telling us about what it's like to be in the International Space Station. It was definitely very exciting, and it was definitely very unusual, and we weren't sure how it was going to be at first, and then we heard it, and we've all been looking forward to to it for ages now.
Ms. Holbert says the experience has helped to inspire the children and show them a wide variety of careers like radio operation, test piloting, journalism, and of course, being an astronaut.
I think today has been a real launch pad to opening children's eyes into all sorts of different STEM careers, from the radio gentleman to the press that we've had on site, to NASA and the logistics team, and to Matthew himself and the concept of being a test pilot and then an astronaut travelling perhaps on the first manned mission to Mars.
And that was our reporter, Laurie Moore, talking to youngsters at Axminster Primary School.
We're talking about astronauts voting there. It's time for the people of Devon to take that plod out to the polling station or pop their postal votes in the postbox. Elections taking place across the county on Friday the 2nd of May. In Plymouth, a third of the council seats are up for grabs, and it's the same in Exeter. And all over the county, we get to vote in a police and crime commissioner, for which there are three candidates, all of whom we spoke to on Devoncast last week. And there will also be a by-election in Torbay on the 6th of June, which is coincidentally the 80th anniversary of D-Day. And the poll for one of the Wellswood seats on the council is going to be quite the battle, with the balance of Torbay Council at stake. This is one for the political anoraks, really, but that's what we are, isn't it, the three of us in here? So bear with me, because it's really interesting. The poll has been brought about by the death of Councillor Patrick Joyce, a really committed young councillor with an absolute passion for what he did. It was always refreshing to chat with him. We had him on Devoncast because he was one of the two Conservative councillors who left the group to form Prosper Torbay. He always had something to say, and he was dedicated to working for the local community. Now, interestingly, immediately after the May elections, the Conservatives in Torbay had 19 out of the 36 council seats. The coalition of Lib Dems and Independents had the other 17 between them. But the creation of Prosper Torbay meant the Tories had just 17, the same as the coalition. Councillors Joyce and Katia Madison, who left the Conservative group along with him, held the balance of power. If the Conservatives win back the seat in Wellswood, in what is a bit of a Tory stronghold, they'll have 18 on the council, the same as those held by the Coalition and Prosper Torbay combined.
Deadlock.
Absolute deadlock. But if the seat's won by a Liberal Democrat or an independent candidate in a Conservative heartland, that would give the Coalition 18 to the Conservatives 17. Prosper Torbay's won, which would mean the Coalition regaining control of the council. So the point I'm laboriously and long-windedly making there, gentlemen, is that there's ordinarily a by-election in a Torquay council seat wouldn't be terribly interesting, but this one really is.
And does it have any implications for the combined authority later?
I don't think it will as such, although if the balance of power shifts again, there may be a different approach from the council to devolution, although it does seem that all the parties in the chamber at Torbay are committed to making it work.
And anything to do with the general election when it comes up? Because traditionally Torbay has flipped, hasn't it, between Conservative and Liberal Democrat.
And you have the situation where the leader of one of the parties in the council chamber is standing as a candidate in the election. So, yeah, it's all for the anoraks will be very happy.
And we are going to cover the general election, not just on Devoncast and Devoncast Radio, but Radio X as well. And Brad is considerably younger than me. We're talking about how Torbay used to like to be the first...
It did, yeah.
How it used to like to be the first constituency to declare its winner on the night. That doesn't happen anymore, does it, Guy?
It doesn't, no.
And is that because that the boundary has expanded too far?
It has, and there are other constituencies who've just joined in. It used to be between Torbay and Hartlepool. It used to be a straight race between Torbay and Hartlepool. But it's
and the cameras used to film, didn't they? Teenagers running, sixth formers running with the ballot boxes to the county hall, jumping between cars on the roads just to get there in time to try to do it before 11 o'clock. What a shame those days have gone.
It's a thing of the past. It's like It's a Knockout and Jeux Sans Frontières. It just belongs in the 70s. It's just gone. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your company on Devoncast this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening, dog walkers, commuters. I did hear somebody who was listening to us while their partner was watching EastEnders. Thanks for your company. Don't forget...
And why wasn't she listening?
Well, perhaps we can win her over. Don't forget Devoncast Radio, where you can find this podcast alongside all kinds of other local content, including the Building Greater Exeter podcast, the Torquay United Yellow Army podcast, and our excellent rugby podcast, Two Locks and a Cox. And I'm not just saying that because you're in here, Brad.
A bit biased.
Thanks for your time. We'll be back very soon.
Catch the latest episode of Devoncast every Friday at radiox.co.uk or wherever you get your podcasts.